Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM Plus to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.
I can't live this life. Like, this isn't for me. I need to remind myself of where I come from.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
I hate it when you make me laugh. Even worse when you make me cry.
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
But did you die?
And need to talk about more.
Old hard cash, crispy new $100 bills.
I'm Anna Sale. So you just looked at your phone.
Mm-hmm.
What was on your phone?
Somebody sent me a donation.
I'm sitting with Rashima Melson in the common room in her dorm at Georgetown University. A message just popped up on her phone.
They said just a little something from the holidays to spend with your family. Keep us posted on your progress, especially if you need help. Help comes in many ways.
Is that from a stranger?
From a stranger. I don't know who this person is.
Rashima's finishing up her fall semester of her sophomore year at Georgetown. She started getting donations from strangers about a year and a half ago when she was a senior at Anacostia High School in Southeast Washington, D.C. About 99% of the students there get free or reduced lunch. Rashima was valedictorian, and she became a national news story.
It's graduation day for Rashima Melson.
Rashima Melson.
A homeless 18-year-old.
Melson lives with her family at the D.C. General Homeless Shelter.
Homeless shelter, along with her mother and two brothers.
Rashima Melson graduated from Anacostia High School tonight as valedictorian.
And with the turn of a tassel, this young lady goes from homeless to Hoya.
And me, I'm just kind of used to people walking up to me, hey, can I get a picture? So I'm, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
What do they say?
They'll ask me, you know, it's always this list they have. It's like, oh my God, are you Rashima? I'm like, yes. You graduated from Anacostia? Yes. You were valedictorian? Yes. You were in a homeless shelter? Yes. Oh my God. And I'm just like, it's annoying sometimes because it's like, I wish you people would just stop calling me that. Like, I'm not the homeless valedictorian. Like, I'm Rashima Melson.
Rashima's on full scholarship at Georgetown. It was a dream come true. But the transition to college hasn't come without strain.
Especially because I'm so close, like one bus ride away from home. Or, you know, whatever I call that place.
Yeah. So. What has being a student at Georgetown taught you about money?
Money? Gotta get more of it. I mean, That's the best thing that I could possibly think about.
What do you spend money on during the semester?
I spend money on my family, which is the truth. My younger brother, he's 15. He's the only one that's left in the household. And so my mom gets like a certain amount of food stamps. So if her food stamps run out, you know, she'll ask me, you know, hey, can you help me out? It's never like a give me thing or, you know, you have to do this. I'm always like, you know, hey, do you need anything? And a lot of people come to me and they say, you know, that's not your responsibility. You need to worry about yourself, blah, blah, blah. And I get that. But me and my family, I've grew up sharing meals with people, sharing one meal with like three people. That's always the way my family or me and my friends are going to be. We're always going to help each other out.
Your mom's had trouble finding work for a long time. Is that how you would describe it?
I don't know what's my mom's deal. I'm not even going to speak on that because if I say the wrong thing, oh, Jesus.
Rashima says her mom has always relied on public assistance. Rashima's father was shot and killed when she was less than a year old. Then, when Rashima was 13, her family lost their housing. Rashima, her mom, and her two brothers didn't have anywhere to go.
We were actually moving around, living here and there. We got split up sometimes. A couple nights we stayed on the street. And then that's when my mom, she was like, you know, I don't want to keep doing this. Let's just go to the shelter. And from there, maybe we can find housing. So that's when we entered the shelter. When I was 15 going on 16.
Mm-hmm. So it was 2 years of moving around and having unstable housing mm-hmm. before the shelter.
Yeah.
While you're going through puberty, like... surrounded by your brothers, I imagine not having much space to yourself.
Nope, not at all. And that's a really big stage in a female's life. It was just different for me. I think when I was younger, I would say that my family like bullied me. And I say this with a smile now, but when I was younger, it upset me so much. You know, I'm the only lighter skinned person in my family, and everybody else is, you know, darker. And they would say, I talked white, and I was like, whatever. I'm a kid, and I was really overweight. The doctors were saying, you know, I was going to be obese. And so I was, like, put on a SlimFast diet when I was about eight.
When you were eight?
I was eight. It was just a lot that I went through, and I feel like I didn't have a normal childhood, and I didn't get the experiences that I see other people have.
But Rashima always excelled as a student. It was clear that she was a good reader as a kid. By high school, she knew she needed to stand out.
I remember my first cross-country meet in high school. I passed out once I got to, like, the finish line. And I'm looking up, and those people are staring at me. I'm like, what place did I come in? Like, I don't care, like, how I'm feeling. They're like, seventh, you did so good. I'm like, I did horrible. And, like, I just, like, started crying. And I was like, don't touch me. I need to become number one. We need to run again. And I was like... so full of emotion, and I kept saying, I'm not gonna get into college from number one. I need to be number one. And everybody was looking at me like, oh my God, what's wrong with that girl? And then my coach kind of was like, come on, let's take you to the bathroom. It's like, I don't care, you know, you don't understand what I'm going through. And it was like, I'm homeless and I live in the shelter and I need money, you know what I'm saying? And my parents can't, and I was like, my mom can't afford college. And I was like, I need this, I need a scholarship or I need my grades. And I've really had a burst of emotion that I feel like I've never had in my life. And when I even think about it now, I feel that emotion. I'm just like, yeah, I can't feel. I mean, like, what would I do? And do I want to believe that I didn't work hard enough or there's something more that I could have done? No, I can't feel. So,
landing a full ride at Georgetown didn't make that fear go away. It feels like an opportunity Rashima can't squander.
I really don't get out much. I just study, I work, and that's about it.
I can remember when I started college, just the experience of all of a sudden sharing a dorm and a social life with people from all over the country and who had all sorts of different family arrangements growing up and all sorts of different income levels that they were used to, like... what do you remember about the first weeks and figuring out who the people were that were surrounding you?
That's what I didn't do. My goal here, my job here, is to just get my education and just to keep it moving. It's not a bad thing. It's not that I don't, you know, like people or anything like that. It's just my motives are different. And I think when people come to college, you know, I hear all about, yeah, that's social life. We're going to go to parties. Yeah, it's a lot of parties here. And on Friday night, I'm like in my bed. I'm getting some sleep because the week was just so tiring.
This semester, across the country, there have been protests around the feeling of inclusion around race on college campuses, including here on Georgetown's campus. Have you felt any of that? Did those protests resonate with you at all?
I didn't know about those protests. You talking about the Black Lives Matter?
Kind of the Black Lives Matter, but then at University of Missouri and at Yale, and there were some at Georgetown around the naming of a building.
You know, I'm really bad with this, and this is exactly what I mean when I say I'm so focused.
You didn't read the news.
No, and that's the thing. So, literally last night I stayed up until 4 o'clock in the morning. I was watching the Eric Garner video I was watching the Trayvon Martin case. I was just educating myself because I've been so caught up in my own bubble worrying about how am I going to help my life.
Your focus.
Yeah. And I kind of had a little breakdown this semester because, you know, I want to get out and I want to have fun and I want to be able to, on a Saturday, not just focus on work, but I'm kind of stuck. I'm kind of in a situation with, like, you know, you're not going back home to a family who financially supports you, or, you know, you're not going back to this place where it's like, you don't have to worry. If you don't get a job, your dad's going to, you know, talk to a friend and get you a job. It's nothing like that. I'm the one that's pushing my family.
Coming up, how feeling lost at Georgetown this semester has turned Rashima's attention back home.
I think my biggest goal at the moment is just to show my family, especially my brother, that I'm here for him always. And that just because I'm at Georgetown and on this side of town means nothing.
In our last episode, a mom named Diane Gill Morris shared her story about raising her two teenage sons who are autistic. She talked about all the ways their autism has made parenting more difficult than she ever imagined. And she said if she'd known what it would be like, she wouldn't have had kids. The episode touched a nerve for a lot of you. Many of you sent in notes of support for Diane. We forwarded those on to her. One of those notes came in from a 31-year-old woman living in New York City. She has a sibling with autism, and she teaches autistic students.
I'm not a parent, so I can't relate to Diane's story completely, but I never signed up to be a sibling of someone with autism either. But I'm so glad I am one. While there were certainly challenging experiences growing up, my brother is the best thing that happened to me and the best thing that is in my life. I suspect my parents feel similarly. We love him so much, but it is important to share how hard it is. Loving someone and finding joy in them and not wishing they were any different still means it's hard.
For others of you, the episode was deeply upsetting, even offensive. A woman named Erin from Omaha, Nebraska, left us this voice memo. She's autistic, and she has a kid who's autistic, too.
Telling the world that you wish your autistic children had never been born and that they have taken too much from you is not brave or admirable. It's hateful and bigoted and devalues the lives of disabled people. This kind of narrative actively harms autistic people by spreading the message that we are lesser kinds of human beings, burdensome to caregivers, and that the world would be better off if we didn't exist.
We also heard from John, who's 54 and was diagnosed with autism about 5 years ago.
In your podcast, the mom says that if she knew what she was in for before she had her boys, she would not have had them. My version of that, my wish, is that I relive my life starting over with one crucial difference. Everyone would know about autism and the ways for helping parents and their kids cope and thrive.
Thanks to all of you for sharing your responses with us. We look forward to hearing from more of you about your own families and experiences. And remember that a year ago, we asked you to tell us your stories about living alone. On the next episode, we get updates on what's happened in the year since.
I can no longer say that living alone is pleasing and satisfying.
This episode is brought to you by Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he will chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price.
Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We have had a lot of exciting new things to share with you about the show recently, but this might be some of our biggest news yet. Death, Sex, and Money is officially going to be live in New York City at the Tribeca Festival on June 11th. And I want to personally invite you to the live taping we'll be doing with the legendary journalist Kara Swisher. If you know Kara's work, you know her ability to get people to tell her things is unmatched. And she does it in her signature, hard-charging way. She's not afraid of things getting a little combustible. I have a slightly different interview style, so we're going to talk about that and play around with that in experimental ways that I think will make this a special show unlike any of our other live shows up to this point. And it's not often that I get to do a live Death, Sex, and Money show in New York, so I really hope to see you there. Whether you're in the city, on the East Coast, or just been looking for a reason to visit New York City, come on June 11th for this show. You can get tickets now at tribecafilm.com/deathsexmoney. We are so excited to see you there.
I'm Shankar Vedantam, here to tell you about a great mystery. That mystery is you. As the host of a podcast called Hidden Brain, I explore big questions about what it means to be human. Questions like, where do our emotions come from? Why do so many of us feel overwhelmed by modern life? How can we better understand the people around us? Discover your hidden brain. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. When Rashima Melson hit a wall this semester, she wasn't just worn out from studying. She was also angry about all the pressure she was feeling.
I got upset. I just was like, why can't I do other things? And why can't I do what other people do? Why can't I watch movies all night? Or why can't I go hang out with friends?
When did that happen? At what point in the semester?
I think it happened, it's in October. I really felt stuck. Like, I had no option. Like, the only thing I have in life is this degree. Like, this degree is saving me. Without this degree, I'm nothing. Why should I be nothing because I don't have a degree? Like, a little piece of paper and some grades don't define me. And that's where I got to the point where I was just like, I'm not about to deal with this. And I thought to myself, I said, I need to go back to the shelter. I told my dean I went to talk to him. I was like, you know, I've never lived richly. I've never had, like, exquisite things. I know what it's like to be in that struggle. I was happy then and just living the life that I wanted because I was pushing myself. And now I have, like, all these other people on my back, like, yeah, you gotta do it. No, yeah, like, and it's all this in my ear. And I'm just like, these people don't be, like, driving me crazy.
It's interesting to me that it was that when you hit that wall, it wasn't, maybe I should go out on a Friday night instead of staying in and studying, or maybe I should go out on Saturday, or maybe I don't have to do all the reading on this Monday night. Mm. But it was, maybe I'm going to drop out. Like, it went that far.
It did. But it did. Like, I just feel like that's my life. I feel like people see me as, that's the homeless valedictorian. She goes to Georgetown. My life is Georgetown. And then it's like, if you're not in school, then what are you doing? It really made me feel that way where I was just like, I don't even want to do this anymore.
That feeling has faded. Rashima says she's gotten her groove back, but she's still not very concerned about building a social life at Georgetown.
And I feel like I want to dedicate more to my family and be more involved in their lives. And really, you know, instead of like, hey, should I go on a date? Which I don't go on dates. I don't know why I said that. But, you know, if I started dating someone, you know, why not take my mom out? You know, like, I want to learn about her. I don't know a lot about her either. I mean, I've been around her my whole life. But, I mean, I could tell you the things that make her angry. I mean, I could tell you, like, her birthday and stuff. But as far as really jumping into getting to know her, we've never shared our background stories with each other, like who we are with each other. I want to kind of build that relationship that we never had.
Was your mom comfortable with the media coverage?
I say she was like 50-50, honestly. I think like she was happy, you know, for people to come to her and say, wow, your daughter's amazing, or, you know, and just give positive feedback. And I think that really made her feel good. I think what she didn't like about it was that her friends, you know, who she was close with, you know, they were finding out things, and she was like, you know, I didn't really want my business, you know, on display. And I think in a sense it was kind of embarrassing. Yeah, I think it's 50-50.
You said earlier that when you were a kid, your family would point out that your skin was fairer than the rest of the family, mm-hmm. and would point out the way that you talked, that like you were white. Was that in some ways kind of picking at you for being focused on school and excelling in school?
I really just think they're mean people.
Did you, as a kid, did you talk differently than your family?
No. I really thought I was adopted. I'm so different from them. And I see that I'm not different from them now, because they have this this stride about them, this anger kind of in them, and this like just kind of raunchy way. I can't really explain, like they're loud and boastful people, and you know what I mean? And I was always quiet, polite, blah blah blah, you know, pleasing others, stuff like that. And now that I'm kind of, you know, experiencing these moments in life where I have my breakdowns and where I'm feeling this kind of way, where I feel pressured, I feel that anger, and I feel that side of me that comes out. I feel the way that the tone in my voice changes. I feel those things, and then I feel close to them. And not because, like, we're feeling the same thing, but I think I feel like what it's like to actually see the real world. And now I'm like, I feel it. I feel it.
Is there a part of you that's at all afraid that as you get your degree, as you become more successful, earn more money, that it'll be hard to stay close to your family?
Nope. And I was just having that conversation the other day. One day I actually did feel like I was living this Georgetown life. But, you know, the fact was that, like, you know, I was getting comfy. And when you're comfortable, you don't need to push. You know, you settle, you just relax, you're cruising, you're on cruise mode. I did not need to be cruising. And, you know, I went to go see my family. Somebody had just got killed the other day, shooting. I just always need to go back and remind myself, because that's what pushes me. If I lose my motive, my drive, the reason why I'm so determined, that's a problem. I cannot get comfy in this world. This will be over in 2 years.
Rashima sees her family regularly. She takes the metro to the other side of town, where her mom and brother now live in an apartment. They've moved out of the shelter. Her mom and brother have also visited her at Georgetown.
I remember the first semester, because I was here for the summer as well. I remember the first semester that I was here, once everybody else went home and I was still here. I didn't want to sleep by myself, so I told them to come up here and sleep with me. And they stayed with me, was it a couple days? They stayed with me, and we, like, these little small twin beds, and we just slept together. I don't want to be alone.
In the dorm?
Mm-hmm, in the dorm.
Is it comfortable when your family's here on campus with you?
Yeah, I mean, like, what do you mean by that?
Just, like, that they're coming from a different part of D.C. You're the one who gets to live here. They know they have to go back at the end of the visit.
I would rather be with them.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I Why? Never want my family to feel like I'm getting the better stick of things, you know what I mean? And this isn't permanent. This is just something, to me, this is my home for the moment. Why should they, I mean, if anything, they're more stable than I am at the moment. My name isn't on my mom's voucher. My name isn't on my mom's lease. I'm not on my mom's health insurance anymore. So, you know, they're kind of good, and I'm still kind of figuring things out.
Rashima Melson. She's a sophomore at Georgetown, and she regularly posts videos on her website at rashimamelson.com, where she answers questions from young people trying to figure out how to get to college. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios. The team includes Katie Bishop, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. Special thanks to our intern, Destry Sibley, for all of her help this semester. We also want to welcome our new producer, Chester Jesus Soria, to the team. Chester was raised in Houston. He's been covering politics in New York City, but he's excited to be coming back to making audio. He's a big podcast and music fan. In fact, 4 years ago, he blew all of his savings to see his favorite band, Pulp, reunite on stage in London. And he says it was totally worth it. The Reverend John DeLure and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death Sex Money, or you can email us anytime with your stories or your feedback at deathsexmoney@wnyc.org. At school, Rashima has become really close to her roommate. They've lived together since their freshman year.
She is really intelligent. Like, you say one thing to her, it's like talking to Google, and she just pop up like all these facts on you. And then she, like, I'm telling you, if you had a conversation with her, like, she would not stop talking. But she would be so interesting, which you wouldn't even notice the time flying. Yeah, I'm spending Christmas with her family, so.
Where's her family live?
She lives in New Jersey. I'm not sure which part. But I just know it's not the part where the Six Flags is, because I asked her. So, yeah.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.